CliffCentral.com.
Are you ready for a big reveal this morning? Because Robbie just came in now, our guest for the morning, Robbie Kajetan. He's got a hell of a story. He's just written a book called Left Foot, Right Foot, which we'll find out all about. But before we do that, he has something to tell us about a story that unfolded many years ago. So before I even do your introduction properly, where do I know you from?
Gareth, you and I go way back.
Way back.
I think it was 2008. No, 2009.
Did we meet in the public toilets with George Michael?
No.
Did we meet drunk at a bar?
No, bro, wrong club.
Was it a strip club?
No, it was actually online. You were auctioning off human flesh for Valentine's Day.
I auctioned off my buddy in Leanne.
Yes, and I phoned in and I dropped the E-bomb.
Yes.
I said, I'm going to Everest in a few months. I'd like to. I was sad and single. I'd love to be part of it. And so I flew up to Joburg and had...
And who did you get your date with, Mabali or Leanne or both?
Leanne.
Oh.
Mabali was otherwise occupied.
I had a terrible, terrible experience from that episode.
What happened? Did you...
Do you remember we had to eventually get security at work to intervene with the guy? Because he subsequently ended up stalking me. I had to get the security involved.
You're so pretty when you sleep.
Oh, no. It was... Mine was far worse than Leanne's.
What do you mean far worse than Leanne's?
No,
was mine bad?
No, my experience was terrible. Leanne had a good time. I, on the other hand,
Yeah, we had dinner and it was nice and
yeah, you
landed
guys,
up at the Jolly Roger.
Well, that's always where she would take us.
Yeah. And
my bunny had a stalker and you ended up with a stalker of your own, Leanne Moll.
I spoke
to her the other day.
Yes.
And she regrets ever having met you.
Oh, that's okay.
No, I'm kidding.
Tell her to join the queue.
No, I'm kidding. That would be very mean. All right. Robbie's written a book called Left Foot, Right Foot. It's a story about falling down and getting up. And you've been on with Brenton and DeCue before, and we've spoken to you a couple of times. And, you know, I know you've been on Cliff Central on some of the shows, but it's the first time I've actually got to sit and interview you properly. And I had no idea that our story went back that far because I tend to forget people.
You do meet like a million people a day.
No, I'm just a horrible human being.
Ah, okay.
But
the shoe fits.
But Robbie, it's very nice to have you here. It's very nice to be able to talk to you face to face about your own story. And we're going to get into that in a moment. But I just have to caution you. You were telling Lucas that he can purchase piranhas as pets. Lucas, yep. Lucas, get in here. You're not allowed to buy a piranha. You've got rabbits. This is a bad combination.
Don't mix.
Now you want a piranha in a tank, like
what
in an aquarium. What are you doing? Why are you listening to this man?
Now, so I've always had this idea. What if I could build an aquarium or a glass where fish can stay on the wall of my house, and I will have this piranha surrounding, swimming around while I'm just chilling,
and that's
watching
your security system.
Yeah, that's my security system.
So, okay.
Like here in studio, you can have the glasses on the wall.
You know, Lucas, I've never in my life wanted someone to be a billionaire more than I do right now. That person is you. Imagine how much weird shit would go down if this guy had $1 billion.
Next step, sharks with freaking lasers.
Man, yeah. I'll do anything like that. But that'll be cool. Just imagine you're chilling and there's piranha just swimming around. Nobody will come into you.
It'll cost you a fortune in rabbits.
He's got rabbits. You'll have to drop one in every now and then.
But you know, rabbits, they don't die. They multiply.
Yes.
Yeah. So
you never have a problem with replenishing.
It could create like a terrarium effect. They keep multiplying and the fish
piranhas
sort of balance.
Keep growing.
Could be amazing.
All right.
But... Cool. Or horrible and bloody and disgusting.
Please
hey,
try and stop trying to talk my staff into getting bizarre and exotic.
Don't
pets.
Believe everything you think, Lucas.
Robbie, what I like about you is that you're an adventurer. We were talking earlier about this explorer who went missing in the Amazon in the 1920s. They're making a movie about him called The Lost City of Z.
Ooh.
Which sounds really exciting. But you've been to the Amazon.
I have. It was actually after a climbing trip just 2 years ago. We went to climb El Pamayo in the Cordillera Blanca, which is the other side of Cusco. Everyone said, oh, did you go to Machu Picchu? No.
Yeah.
And then after that, we were finished a couple of days early. So
in Pará.
Pará, yeah, Magapia. Oh. And we hopped on a plane to a tiny little shithole called Iquitos, named after the mosquitos. And we jumped on a boat. These guys took us to a lodge like 10 k's down the road, down the river where the two converge.
Yeah.
We were sort of in a rivulet, a sub-river of the main Amazon, and the guy took us fishing. And yeah, no. Chicken skin on a stick.
Okay, and the piranhas obviously came for the chicken.
Yeah.
Wow.
Within seconds.
Okay, but let's just start at the beginning with the Amazon, because this is a place I'm curious to go to, but I think it's probably going to be very uncomfortable if I do.
There's
insects
different ways to do it.
Galore.
Yeah, plenty. Plenty will be eaten alive, and they love the taste of tabard. We were smothering ourselves in tabard from head to toe. Every spare, like every piece of skin that stuck out was covered, but we still got chowed.
Bubs, you don't have any desire to go into the Amazon.
No, not immediately. or in the next 20 years, no.
That falls under the category. It's like with rock climbing and all of the extreme sports, bungee jumping, it falls under that category, white peopling. You never ever see.
Why? Yeah. Well, because maybe you, no, I don't even think it's a white people thing. I mean, I'm not in any hurry to put myself in an uncomfortable situation. But the Amazon seems to me to be a place that people go to and they come back with really interesting stories. Not everybody, obviously, but it's just so vast and
you
so
have no
primal
idea.
And there's just nothing civilized about it.
I mean, and that's part of the charm for me.
Yeah.
We were, you know, you're on these little boats that are actually little engines that they've modified. They've welded pipes and props together to get the boat to move forward. And you go past these houses that are still constructed from reeds. There's a guy hand carving a paddle for his little canoe. And people still live like that. And that for me was absolutely incredible. You have no idea how large that piece of water is. You can't see both banks at the same time in some places. It is just, it's mind-bending, yeah.
Do you think that there's a pull to, like, simple living? Because we are so attached to our smartphones and technology and flying around in planes and all that stuff. And when you're in the Amazon, you suddenly realize, like, actually, I'm in the food chain again, and I have to struggle to survive. And you see people who are walking around in, you know, like primitive clothing.
Yeah.
People who they do not care about 2017.
No.
For them, it could be 1603. It would be the same thing.
Who says adventure can't happen on a Tuesday? They live so simply, and I think that's a big point. Good point to bring up is living absolutely simply. And I think with a lot of my adventures, whether we're climbing a mountain, you are not worried about the rent. You're not worried about cell phones. You're not worried about anything. Who cares what Zuma said? It's you. Do I have somewhere to sleep? Have I had something to eat? Can we keep moving forward? Is the weather going to kill me today? It's completely immediate, and it in itself is just absolutely beautiful.
All right, well, let's start at the beginning with your story.
Right.
So come on, where did it all begin? Did you have this desire from being a small kid to go and explore the world?
I was always that kind of running, jumping, climbing trees kind of kid. And as I grew up, I was very involved with scouting. Mm-hmm. And through scouting, I ran into all the wrong kind of people. And,
you mean the right kind of people?
Well, I don't know so much. You should meet them.
Really? Are they dodgy people?
No, they're awesome. Oh. It's just, I always say, my life's been on the rocks ever since.
Yeah.
But, and the idea of climbing Kili was always in the back of my head. When I was about 15, I saw that picture of Tenzing Norgay standing on the top of Everest.
Yeah.
And I was like, that's me. And I had no idea what country it was in. I had no idea how much it would cost, how to get there, anything about it. But I had that pull, a very inexplicable pull. And yeah, Kilimanjaro happened when I was 22. And from there, it's just sort of gotten out of control. I mean, landed up going to South America next. And yeah,
out of seven of the highest peaks in the world. So which two are left?
Antarctica. Mount Vincent is the highest point there. That's happening in December.
You're doing it, huh?
Uh-huh. I leave on the 25th of May to go to Alaska to climb Denali, highest point in North America.
Hmm.
So yeah, pretty chilly. Two of the coldest mountains in the world.
Well, yeah. Antarctica and Alaska. It's
but
not
no
exactly
mosquitoes.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Now, people don't know the whole story because they might just hear the part about how you've climbed all these mountains and they don't know that you were in a wheelchair, that you buggered up both your legs and your feet. And you know, life wasn't exactly a bed of roses, and it wasn't like you just had money and decided, okay, I'm going to spend that money climbing mountains.
Yeah,
fun as that sounds.
No, absolutely. That, you know? That's the easy way to do it. Yeah, by 2006, I'd been to Kili twice. I'd climbed highest point in Europe and highest point in South America.
I mean, you were a kid, right?
Well, yeah, I was 23, 24. Yeah. When my accident happened, I was 28.
Okay.
And, yeah.
What happened there?
It's so embarrassing. The week before, I went to Cape Town. And I climbed Jacob's Ladder, which is that route straight up to the table to the cableway station.
It's dangerous.
It's absolutely awesome. So exposed, you know. You realize if you fall, your body would stop rolling around about Camps Bay-ish. you know, did my first skydive, jumped out of a plane and survived it. We descended Plattekloof Gorge in the dark after an epic day out. I get back to Joburg that Monday night. We go to an indoor climbing gym at Wits University. And I was on the bouldering wall. I wasn't even high up. My feet were maybe 3 meters off the ground. And end of the night, I'm tired. I turned and jumped onto the mat. You know those crash mats that you used for high jump at high school? And there's a tear in the mat. And my toes go down the hole. And all of my body goes on top of that and bend my feet backwards.
Oh, jeez.
My toes went together and then backwards.
Ah!
Yeah. So it was
I just got phantom
crunch.
Pain.
Yeah, I know.
When you think about it, you still get sore, right?
Absolutely. That sound, as I sort of crumpled into the fetal position.
This is not just like spraining your ankle. You've done massive damage.
Yeah.
You had to have all kinds of metal put into you, right?
Yeah, absolutely. The first op, they put in, I think, 5 screws into my left foot and about 3 screws into my right foot.
Did you think that was the end of your climbing of mountains and walking around and doing things?
In no uncertain terms, eh? A big thing for
you
me.
You must have cried, man.
Like a baby. I can't even say like a girl. I know a lot of girls are stronger than me. But, it was the end of the life I wanted for myself was now taken away. You have all these amazing plans and aspirations, and then something stupid happens, and I chose to jump. I didn't fall off the wall. And you go, one small mistake has now changed everything.
And not even in an exciting place. I mean, if something had happened to you at base camp in Everest, and you had a scar to prove, this is from Everest. This is from, like, the climbing gym at Wits.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It's as embarrassing as it is painful.
But the good news is that, look, your rehabilitation wasn't easy. But you within about a year and a half, you were okay?
Well, no, it was quite a process. 3 years. It took me 3 years to climb Everest.
Like I said, 3 years. And you
like you said, just 3 years. Yeah, I spent a year in a wheelchair.
That was
7 surgeries so far. The docs have said, I'm headed for ankle replacements.
What does that mean?
They replace the joint. They resurface everything down there.
What do they put in there?
Bits of ceramic and fake talus bones that's a 6-month recovery all on its own. But the doc said, take
is
the smooth
sore now,
road.
Right now?
I wake up with pain every morning. Yeah. If I do something stupid like go for a run or just training, and that creates inflammation because there's a lot of scar tissue in the tendon still.
Okay.
So it's there, but once you read the book, I sort of make sense of it and I can cope with it. I now sort of weigh it up and say, if I've got pain today, it means I did something awesome yesterday and I need to be grateful, not hate my life.
You take medication for that pain sometimes?
When it gets bad, absolutely. But on a daily basis, I try not to, because that then leads to like kidney damage and other stuff. Yeah. But it has been a long process. And you've just got to push through it. I mean,
Who helped you push through it? You didn't do it on your own.
No, it's absolutely impossible to do on your own. I had amazing friends. Those people I was joking about earlier were there for me. I always say when my head dropped, they were the ones that lifted it for me. My mom was absolutely incredible. 28 years old, moving back in with your mom for a sponge bath is an experience all on its own. I had – you cannot do it on your own. I had a lot of people. I had to see a psychologist because, that Robbie, that guy who climbs mountains, became Robbie, that guy in the wheelchair. And that's not what I wanted. Absolutely not what I wanted.
Did you think about just giving up?
Absolutely.
Because people do, right? Even the strongest people – I've met some – people who've been through hell, and they all admit there's a moment where you go, I think I should just throw in the towel here.
Absolutely. 3rd of November 2006, in case you were wondering. That was the night I found myself 2 o'clock in the morning counting painkillers. Yeah, Sinep Forte, a morphine-based drug. I realized that 35 would probably kill me, so I made a deal with myself. I said there needs to be 70 tablets because I didn't want to do half a job. I didn't want to leave a vegetable on a heart-lung machine for my mom. You know, that's not on her bucket list.
Yeah.
And, yeah, I said if there's 70 tablets, drink them all, do a perfect job of it, because only thing in my head was the heart-lung thing. Mm. And medical insurance won't pay for botched suicide attempts, and I could not deal with more debt. Yeah. Correct. So
how much did you owe at that point?
Shed loads. I'd maxed all of my credit cards. I mean, at the age of 28, my average salary was like 10 grand a month, and I owed probably six times that. And you kind of go, well, how much worse can it get? And yeah, I was shitting myself, absolutely shitting myself. I hadn't slept in 3 days, and I realized, well, this is the point. Stop the earth. I'm ready to climb off. Yeah.
How did you get out of that?
Well, shit. There were only 57 tablets in the bottle. So you go, yeah, one of the biggest things for me, imagine the realization that you're such a failure, you can't even kill yourself. And you kind of go, I mean, because I couldn't hang myself. You know, I'd given my climbing ropes to my friends. Couldn't jump off the balcony. That would just be embarrassing again.
Because you'd probably break your feet again.
Yeah. And now it's your knee. Shit. Seriously, life. Yeah, life would do that to you. So, yeah, I had to just swing it. I had to decide that, you know, I'm at the bottom of the hole. Stop digging. Now we start to climb out. And, yeah, my bucket list saved my life. Because I had Mount Everest tattooed across my back 2 years before my accident. And because it was getting closer. You climb bigger mountains, and all of a sudden it's within reach. And I realized I needed something to get out of bed in the morning. And I said, I need to climb Everest. And I made that decision. And yeah, that was my reason to get out of bed, reason to go to physio, reason to survive another op.
What kind of picture did you have in your head? Did you have a picture of you at the summit of Mount Everest? Did you have a picture of this overbearing, huge, incredible goal that was almost unreachable?
Funny enough, it wasn't overbearing. I had no idea. I would only shit myself later when I actually got onto the mountain. I had just a picture I found on Google, and I went and printed it out, and I stuck it on my cupboard door about a meter off the ground so that it was eye level to wheelchair.
What does Everest look like when you can actually see it?
It's absolutely mind-boggling. On the second day of the walk to base camp, there's a little gap just before Namche between the conifer trees, and it's this giant white-gray pyramid that just dominates the skyline. And you look at it and you go, that is 40 Ks away from where we're standing. It is so huge. I mean, it's nine Table Mountains stacked on top of each other. I mean, a lot of people can't fathom that, myself included.
Wow.
Yeah, and when I saw that, I just, after all this preparation, the realization, you're not getting to the top of this, you need to get to the bottom first. That was a big thing for me. And yeah, it is honestly the biggest thing I've ever seen in my entire life. And yeah. Well,
it is among the biggest things there are.
Absolutely.
Full stop,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
When you're preparing for something like this, What are you thinking is the worst case scenario, or do you not even think about that and plan for the best, or are you excited? Which emotion takes
precedence? It's like Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. You do get excited and you look on the internet and you read the books and you get all amped about it, and then you sort of look at the death toll. And you don't go to Everest ignoring what the worst case scenario is. You have to be absolutely in tune with the fact that you stand a 1 in 20 of chance of dying. And yeah, that's the motivation. You've got to use that as the motivation, because yeah, the mountain will never stop and ask if you have a valid excuse. You know, you've got to go there guns blazing with everything in order, or don't bother. Yeah, so with the preparation, visualization is very, very, very important. But that being said, when I got there, it was nothing like I had imagined. It was bigger.
What kind of physical condition were you in by the time you decided to climb? Because you can't go up there if you're not 100%, or at least close to that, because otherwise you just make it dangerous for everyone else, right?
Well, yeah, absolutely. I was by no means Superman. I was the slowest in the group. I admit that on the first page of the book. I was the slowest. I was always last into camp. I was the guy who made the expedition leader work for his money. I was, if you look at it logically and rationally, I should never have signed up. And, yeah, it's a fine balance because you look at it and you go, on paper, I should never have been there. But it was the most incredible, most influential moment of my life. And if I'd missed out on that, I'd probably still be sitting on my mom's couch watching SABC3.
Ugh.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's horrendous.
Yeah.
Given the choice, I'd rather go up Everest too.
I'd rather have fire ants in my eyes.
What's it like up there? I mean, the air is thin, you can hardly breathe. You've got it's cold necessarily. It's quiet, but it's noisy because you've got wind all the time, right?
Yeah. The day I summited, we were at the end of the window period. So there's a couple of days each year where the weather sort of backs off enough and the weather systems move up from the Bay of Bengal and close the season. And we caught the last day. So I can't even say I had a view. It was like 5 meters visibility.
When you were all the way up there, you couldn't see a thing.
Standing on top, I could see maybe 5 meters.
Someone said, all right, you're here now, let's go.
No, it's very obvious because you kind of run out of uphill. And there's nowhere else to go. You reach this pinnacle. It's a piece of snow the size of your table.
And it's just snow because obviously anyone who's planted a flag or put anything up there before, it's all been covered in snow since.
It gets snowed on. The winds up there, I mean, the winds can blow up to 200
kilometers. So nothing stays. There's no can of rocks that says, okay, well done, you got to the top.
With Jack Nicholson's ashes. No, it's not there.
Nothing.
There was, on the year I was there, and I'm not sure if it's still there, there's a glass-sided box with a statue of Buddha inside it.
Oh.
Because the Sherpa are very, very religious and reverent. And yeah, so it's up there with a pile of prayer flags. You know, there's
but it's under the snow most of the time.
And then it gets snowed on, and then the wind removes the snow, and yeah. Snow shifts.
But is it concreted in up there? It's, in other words, it's probably
no one closed. Volunteered to carry.
Poor old Buddha's probably taking a couple of tumbles down the mountain as well.
Absolutely. It's probably been knocked over.
And you walk past a bunch of dead people?
I went past one that I know of. It was in the daylight because you summit at night.
Yeah.
We went up in the dark, and on the way back, I passed a corpse of a Taiwanese climber. He had been there for about 4 years, and his head's buried under the snow, so I didn't see a face. But yeah, his suit is bleached by the sun. His hands look, you know, when meat in the freezer, when the packet breaks and the meat's sort of freezer burned, his entire body was like that.
Oh, my God.
But it wasn't a scary sort of World War Z experience.
No.
You kind of.
Just quiet.
I stood there for about 10 minutes. And in my head, I had a conversation with this guy going, how come me, the damaged guy, is standing upright and breathing and you are lying dead in the snow? And that's where you'll be forever. That's an entire chapter in the book. And just an amazing sort of realization of mortality. And if anything, if I live through this, what am I going to do with it?
Okay, so compare a couple of the these high mountains to me quickly. We've spoken about Everest a little bit.
Yes.
What's majorly different about Kilimanjaro or Aconcagua, any of those?
What's majorly different? Kilimanjaro. I mean,
what's the feeling? In your mind, what memories do you associate with each of those? Or are they all just high mountains?
Well, all mountains are big and need to be taken seriously.
Essentially, it's just rock and snow. And,
you know. Well, yeah, the one thing that sticks out for me with Aconcagua is it is just dust and misery. To get to the base camp is like a 30K trek through this valley that there's no greenery.
It's a desert, right?
It is a desert.
Yeah. The Andes up there, there's nothing grows.
Absolutely dead. The wildlife you see are a couple of crows, maybe a mouse stealing crumbs under the table, but it's void of life. And that plays on your head. You're in base camp for like 3-4 weeks and not seeing greenery plays with your head.
Because when we think of South America, usually we don't think of the Atacama Desert. We think of lush greenery in the Amazon and all that stuff.
Coffee beans.
Yeah, but Aconcagua is just this. It's a rocky desert.
Everything is dusty. You know, you chew your food and there's grit in it. You just sort of you can feel it on your teeth every morning you wake up. So that's the one thing that sticks out. Kilimanjaro for me, what's amazing is you start on day one in the jungle and you land up in the polar regions on day five, and it's amazing in the fact that average Joe with a little bit of training and fuss bait can actually get to the top. That's cool. And I mean, I've been 9 times with everyone from friends to my wife went with me. My brother's been up there with me. It's an incredible, incredible experience.
And what's the Australian one?
Mount Kosciuszko.
What's that like?
It can be a horrible day out. And if Yeah, if you don't watch yourself, you can be late and get back after the cappuccino shop has closed.
Because it's not the highest.
It's not. It's actually, yeah. I got quite brave, and it was the closest I've actually come to death on any of the seven summits.
Really?
I got brave, what? And I thought, okay, because it's such a small mountain, it's 2,200 meters high, I'm going to climb the seven highest points in Australia, and Kosciuszko will be one of them, and I'll do it in a day. It was a 35K trip. I mapped it out, and on my way to the first one, I got completely off the path and landed up climbing down this thing that I would never do without a rope now. And one of the rocks that I was hanging onto nearly pulled and toppled onto me.
Oh.
And as that happened, I got this thing in my head going, oh, so this is how I die. Perfect. And I jumped
on,
it.
On the least exciting of the world's seven highest.
Yeah. I mean, I emerged from that. My shins were shredded. My arms were cut to pieces. It was a bad day out. But I managed to catch up with the rest of the group, my wife, my brother, and his fiance. And we got to the top. I was wearing shorts and the pajama top from Qantas. It had a big kangaroo on it. So I thought that would be quite rad for summit photos. Yeah, it's only one of the seven summits I've done in shorts. So... yeah, and
was that that was the closest you came to real, like,
I honestly thought, okay, edge. This is me. Hmm. Yeah, I duffed it completely. Yeah, but I've been on Denali in Alaska as well, and I got to high camp, and because of my injuries, inflammation in my ankles, I was just,
oh, that has to suck. So you had to turn around.
Well, yeah, I waited in high camp. My friends went off and summited, came back 12 hours later. We couldn't, all I needed was a rest day.
But to go and all that way, and now you miss
now
it.
Now I get to repeat it.
Yeah.
I've done 95% of the suffering, and I've got to do it again. Hmm. That's a big thing in my head, and I've got to wrap my mind around it and get confident again, and
I would imagine not a lot of people get to do the Antarctic one because it's so isolated.
So pricey as well.
Oh, really? Yeah. What does it cost to go to Antarctica, climb a mountain?
$43,000.
You're $43,000?
Yes, yes. The flight onto...
Is it worth it?
Don't put it out there.
No, come on.
It is. It's really crazy. I mean, I paid $42,000 in 2009 for Everest. And now... yeah, I look at this and I go, I'll be on the mountain for literally 5 days. Well, it could turn into 2 weeks if weather's bad, but for those 5 days. But it's just something I've started and I have to finish.
What hell is this? Why do you do this?
Absolutely. I don't know, because I started 17 years ago and it's just become something that I have to finish. Success is when you take one step further than you thought you could. And that's happened so many times for me. It's been just absolutely amazing.
Now,
and
what are you going to do when you run out of mountains?
That's absolutely impossible. After the seven summits, I'd like to
By the way, in Europe, it's
stuff.
What, Mont Blanc?
No, Mount Elbrus in Russia.
Oh, that's right.
And they're the thing that sticks out for me is the Russians.
Yeah, what about them?
Aggressively depressed.
Really?
They are terrible. By the end of 2 weeks, I'm ready to slash my wrists.
Yeah.
And yeah, I'm quite a friendly people person. I'm quite bubbly.
There's just no energy there.
Yeah.
They're all miserable, miserable people.
Yeah. Walking through the village at the bottom of the mountain with the Russian guide, Yuri, and he turns to me and he goes, stop smiling. People are saying you're crazy. Because you walk past someone, you're like, hi, hello. Or if you bump trolleys in the supermarket, we usually smile or make a joke.
Must be angry.
Must be said. Yes.
Terrible.
Yeah.
That's no way to live.
No, it isn't. It isn't. And but Russia's cool. The people get to me after a while, but it's definitely something you got to see.
All right. What about this bucket list that once you've climbed all these mountains, what else is on there that you need to do?
Oh, there's so much. I would like to live in a house I designed myself. I would like to write
more than
one book.
That's so strange. That's on my list.
Oh, really?
It's awesome. Like quite an obscure thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And not materialistic. I'm not wanting 14 jacuzzis.
Yeah, exactly. It's a functional, cool thing that you can say is yours.
Yeah, I want an ensuite bowling alley. Yeah, it's just something functional that I can say this works for me because I started it from the ground up.
Okay.
I would like to – well, one cool thing I did recently was eat pizza and pasta in Italy.
And that's cool.
That was amazing. Your bucket list is not just about the adrenaline stuff, you know, jump out of a perfectly good airplane, get a tattoo, that sort of stuff. But if you're from Four Ways, you can.
Four Ways, all that is on most people's bucket list is the tattoo. After that, they may as well die.
Yeah, and it has to be on your ankle. but yeah, there's so many things. Yeah.
All right. But now, Mubs, what's on your bucket list? Let's have a look here, and then Robbie can give us some indication of whether he's impressed or not.
You know, travel is a big thing, but it's not something that I can always afford. I've always thought that if I had unlimited money, all the money in the world, I would spend 1 month in a different country for the rest of my life. Every month, change it up to a different country. That's how I would live.
That would be fun.
That'd be awesome.
But as a tourist?
Yeah, sure. As a tourist.
You're only there a month.
So I would live my life in different parts of the world, just soaking it all up.
There's ways and means of doing that. If it's important to you, you can make it happen. If you're willing to flip burgers at McDonald's to go see America, if you're willing to wash dishes to see France, there's ways and means. If it's that important to you, you can find a way. I mean, we'd all love to do the 4-star experience. Mm. Actually, it's overrated. I don't even like champagne. But it cost us, in all honesty, it cost us 2,500 rand to experience the Amazon.
Really?
Yeah. We slept in hammocks with mosquito nets. If you saw the kitchen, it was rural, absolutely rural, cooking on wood fires. There's ways and means to do things. Yeah.
Okay. So yours is travel. What else is on yours, Ben?
Okay, so I got 5 things.
Okay, let's go. Here we go.
In a Word document.
Ben's top 5.
Well, there's only one sporting event I really want to go to, and that's the Masters at Augusta.
Uh-huh.
But while there, I want to drive across America and do a golf trip. So play various courses while seeing all those strange states.
Okay.
I want a dog at some stage. Design a house and live in it.
Sorry, how's Meowsers going to feel about you wanting a dog?
She'll warm to it.
She'll adapt.
Because I feel like she runs your house, not the other way around.
Yeah, but she'll appreciate the fact that it's something I want to do, and then she'll be okay with it.
No, she's going to hate you.
And then I want to compete in a professional sports event, whatever it may be, however old or whatever it is. That's one of the things.
You know, when you get to the end, to like the 90s, there are a lot of gaps that open up to take part in professional sport because most 90-year-olds are dead.
Completely.
Like Ironman, I figured I could podium at Ironman if I lived to like 80.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You could. You just have to complete.
Just got to keep going.
You don't have to be the winner. Sia, get in here. Let's hear about your bucket list.
But I'm with you on the dog thing. I'd like a dachshund. It's
not a dog.
In the house. No, it is.
It's an ornament.
Come on.
If it doesn't fit in a handbag, it's a dog.
So, Mubs, is your list just one thing?
Well, I mean, I thought we were just naming one thing. Sorry.
No. You can go as many as you like. I know Sia's probably got a list of 512 things.
Hence list.
Yeah. All right, Sia, what's on your bucket list?
Well, you see, mine has a bit to do with money.
That's okay. Go
on. So, for example, you know, flying private at least once in my life.
Okay, that's
not even first class private.
No, a total private jet, okay. And it has to be to a crazy destination, like going to party in Monaco for a weekend with my friends.
Monaco's mm-hmm. nice.
Been there. Robbie's been everywhere.
Doing ayahuasca.
Yep.
Have you heard about that?
Impera.
I do.
Iquitos.
I just heard it like flips you inside out.
I threw up and shot everywhere.
I do.
On myself.
It's like, you know what, why not?
Sure.
And I would like to have, and I think I've mentioned this before, like a dinner with some of my favorite people or people I've looked up to.
Okay.
Yeah.
We're not busy on Wednesday.
Well, he says ever so modestly, but alas.
I'm kidding. I am busy on Wednesday.
I want to fly a helicopter.
Yeah.
I wanted to never ever wear a collared shirt again that wasn't made especially for me.
Oh, that's good.
Nice. I want to get a massage once a month from some little Thai lady who just knocks the shit out of you if you have a pain in your neck or whatever.
Okay. Aren't you doing that already?
No, please.
I
can't discipline myself. I want to buy the biggest box of Lego ever. And build scale models of all the houses that I've designed. I want to write a song once in my life. Even if it's a crap song, I just want to write an original song.
Cool.
Wouldn't that be cool?
Cool.
Mm. I want to just pay for other people's meals without them knowing it was me. Just go to places or go to shops where you see someone's got a tiny little basket of like sausages and crap. And you just look at the woman at the counter and she knows that you're paying for that lady. And she says, oh, it's paid for. And the lady just goes, oh, wow, how did that happen? And she leaves and doesn't know it's me.
I dare you to do it before Friday.
I can. I'm going to be in America, though. I don't care about Americans. So,
oh, you're going to be paying for someone else's groceries in dollars.
No, I'll do it. I want to go to the pyramids. I haven't been there before.
Cool.
I want to collect 10 really, 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 really rare books. But like super arcane, printed on the Gutenberg printing press kind of books. I want to learn to meditate.
Snap on that.
Are you doing that now?
Trying, hardest thing in the world.
I want to go on a proper fox hunt.
Ooh. Nice.
Build my dream house. I want to I want to go and see China as well. I haven't been to China. I'd like to see China. Just fascinating, just like so different. And Japan. Tokyo. Got to have that on your bucket list too.
Definitely.
So there's a couple. I mean, I haven't given you the total list because some of these are so boring. They for me, they're exciting. But those are the kinds of things I'd like to do. What else is on yours? Come on.
I would like to do that whole suit fitting thing. You mentioned having a shirt tailor-made for yourself.
Yeah, go to Savile Row and have use a piece of chalk on it.
Do you dress left or right?
Right, exactly. Both. All right.
Sorry, what does
scratching
that mean?
His knee.
Is your cock bigger on the left or the right?
Oh.
So make more space in your pants for it.
Oh, okay. All right. All right.
It's got to do with the natural. Never mind. Yeah.
Yeah. Right, now, you see, my buddy's learning now. She's excited.
I had no idea what you people were talking about at all.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Go on.
I would love to have lunch with either Steve Carell or Will Ferrell. That's, you know, everyone goes, I'd like to have lunch with Gandhi. No. Those guys are cool. I think we just have a shit
mostly
of a laugh.
Gandhi's dead, so yes.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Sure, there's actually so much. I mean, places like Japan I'd like to go see, eat real sushi there. I would like to eat the worm at the bottom of the tequila bottle in Mexico.
Okay.
See an erupting volcano. Get as close as I can to lava. Because that's what the earth is made out of. That stuff's been so fascinating for me since I was young. I want a trophy or an award named after me.
Oh, okay.
Something positive. Darwin kind of thing. But either at, you know, maybe my high school will give
so
it to
not
kids
like
who smell
most
good.
Burps in 30 seconds. Nah. Not that kind of.
No, like maybe for kids that show like a spirit of adventure or something. I don't know. Something cool like that.
Meal models that spell really good.
Yeah. I never want to have a job where I get told what shoes to wear.
Oh.
I like to wear Nike Air Max 90s. They're my thing.
Uh-huh. That's what you wear. That's it.
Because every day is a good day to have feet for me. no, if I go back to the depths of despair, I went through severe depression to a point where I found myself researching on the internet double below the knee amputation because I was so sick and fucking tired of my feet.
Yeah,
I wanted them off, and I've managed to work out of that. So every day I got feet is so awesome. It's like peanut butter on hot toast. If I can have peanut butter on hot toast, it's going to be a good day. So yeah, lots of big things, little things. I would like to pay, and the big plan is to put someone else's kid through school. And then make that 10 kids.
Huh.
We don't get given money and influence and stuff for our own good. If you can make a change with it, then that's what you got to do.
It's a good way
that's
to do it.
That's very generous of you.
Oh, I say these things on radio, but actually I'm a bit of a shit. No, that's, I mean, yeah.
Don't worry. What Mubs really means is, have you got some on you now?
How you doing?
Yeah. No, I don't think most people, you know, would think far enough to care about somebody else. So
yeah. I mean, there's an app or a website I'd like to launch based on the bucket list. Get another degree. You just tell me when to stop. I'd like to climb Everest again.
So what degree would you want?
Probably psychology.
Really?
Yeah.
I think maybe that would be the thing for you because you've
maybe
understood it from inside and out now.
I think so. Yeah. And I don't know.
Yeah, that would be interesting. See, if you study again later in life, I think you got to study something that just purely because it really interests you, not because you're going to use it anywhere.
Absolutely.
So many of us go and study things at university that we think we need for a job, and they're useless.
Yeah.
Like, I would study philosophy.
Yeah.
And you can never get a bond if you have a philosophy degree.
No.
Oh, we were going to hire Ben, but we've decided to hire you, Gareth, based on your excellent philosophy degree.
I would like to run my own marijuana farm as well.
Yes.
Medicinal or recreational?
Both.
Okay, cool.
Especially now with the medicinal aspect of it having, you know, been approved or legalized.
Yeah.
For sure.
My own marijuana
farm. Do you know where you want to do this? Have you got a piece of land marked?
I mean, I'd sure. You know, the best land, unfortunately, is back at my parents' house. I mean, if I grew it without them knowing.
Yeah, because your dad wouldn't be thrilled.
No, my dad would be like, get off my house. Like, get off my land. What's wrong with you?
All fun and games till the donkey eats all the dope.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, which is the best part of the country to grow marijuana, like which province?
Eastern Cape, apparently.
Well, wow,
that's
that was
where
quick,
I'd have
Ben.
To do it.
Hey?
Well, I listen to people in the show. It's obvious.
I want to know whether you've met people who have given up and who you feel like you feel bad for, because not everybody's as strong as you are. That you have a situation where you've got busted feet. And you're in a wheelchair, and life doesn't look all that sunny. And as you said, you're counting the pills, the sign up forts.
Yeah.
And you're thinking, I can get out of here. Let me clear the way. I don't need to be. I'm clogging up the system.
Yeah.
But you pull through. You decide, just based on the mathematics of 57 pills.
Yeah.
Rather than the required 70 to make sure that you're gone.
Yeah.
You decide, I'm going to give this a go. What the hell?
I run into people all the time that have given up in one or other aspect of their lives, you know, whether it's in relationships or I'm going to be in this job forever. You know, that whole joke, if they want to get rid of me, they'll have to chuck me out with the trash when I die.
Yeah.
There's people, it's a syndrome, like that cheesy Pinterest post. People are dying at 50, getting buried at 80. It's everywhere. I have met the odd person who they've been through shit in their lives, but it's, funny enough, the ones that have the worst sort of stories, they're the ones that push harder and actually do better. It's the people with mediocre shit in their lives that think that it's the end of the world and they live accordingly, you know, and it's sad. They get to 55 and they hate their life, their relationships, their jobs. They hate everything about themselves. It's no, you know, it's no surprise. Everyone knows.
For some people, it's just practical stuff that needs to be done every day. You know, you got to fill the car up with petrol. You've got to eat certain stuff. You got to keep yourself physically fit. For most people, those routines, that is their life.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, and that's why I think
I sometimes feel that's all I'm doing.
Yeah.
You know,
I was put on earth to pay bills.
Yeah.
No, absolutely. It is a tough one. That's why I think bucket lists or goals are so important. Why are you going to gym every single day? Is it to avoid heart disease or because you're prepping to go to Machu Picchu?
Yeah.
Or you want to go and run the it doesn't have to be a marathon. Maybe it's the 5K 702 walk the talk.
Huh.
Walk with dorks, I think they call it. Huh. But whatever it is, give yourself a goal, something, so that going to the gym is not a chore. It's preparation for something exciting. You're putting in petrol because, oh, damn, shame, man, you own your own car. How hard is life?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You have no idea.
That's another cool thing with traveling is you meet so many people and they've never been in a privately owned car. They do public transport or they have a canoe. And,
What kind of lessons do you take from places like, particularly places like India, where a lot of people have zero?
Absolutely.
Less than zero. They're rolling around and rummaging around in the dirt and muck for enough sustenance to make it through that day. That's it. There's nothing.
Yeah.
We don't know. You know, we see poor people in this country and we think, oh, shame. But, you know, they get a hot meal or two a day.
Yeah.
In India, that's not even happening in some places.
For sure. I mean, although I've never been to India, I have seen absolute squalor. Sorry to disappoint you.
Where did you see the squalor?
Actually, in Iquitos, on the banks of the Amazon, there had been floods that had come through and destroyed houses, and there were people still living in these destroyed houses. The rubbish just like piles up and they move it aside so that people can walk to the market and back. And absolute squalor with less than nothing, you know. You learn so much, and I come back and I go, I'm going to turn this tap and hot water is going to fall out and I can drink it. It's safe to drink. You know, I have a shower and a flushing toilet. I have more than one toilet in my house. I don't even have to go outside. And I just learn an absolute, if anything, it's appreciation, you know, and the way to look at things. I've got to sit on the highway to go and get into Santon for an awesome job that's going to pay money that pays for the next holiday.
What are the things you have to have on your survival list? I'm thinking when you leave home on one of these trips, what do you not leave home without? Because we all think when you pack a bag, for example, you're not thinking that you're going to climb some mountain. And obviously for mountain climbing, you need very specialized equipment.
Yeah.
But are you a bit of a, like you're prepared? You know what you need to have.
To a point. I am a kind of a nerd. I do have like a resus aid and rubber gloves in my car.
In case I stumble upon someone who's time. Like dying in the.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay.
Sure. Power bank, he said, sounding like a complete yup.
Sure.
These
people sanitizer. Want to know this stuff. Yes. That's it. Yes.
Wet wipes.
Change of clothes.
Change of clothes.
I got to change of clothes in the boot. Yeah. We need that.
Yeah. Sure.
Knife.
All sorts of things.
You got to have a knife.
Got to have a knife. I carry a Leatherman Skeletool.
Very good.
Which is very cool. It's super handy. Super
you have a
dorky.
Gun?
I do not have a gun. I'm very anti-gun.
Got some razor blades? Because they can cut through anything with those.
No, that's what the Leatherman's for.
Okay, but you can conceal razor blades.
And duct tape.
Yes, duct tape is very handy.
My New Zealander guides on Everest taught me a very handy thing. If you can't duck it, fuck it.
Right.
So duct tape fixes everything.
Torch?
Torch, yes. I have a Lego Batman LED keyring
that'll work for
anything. I've got a torch in the car, torch at the door of the house.
Some kind of waterproof container?
I have an emergency poncho in the back of my car.
Rope,
absolutely.
You have all of this stuff in your car?
Yes.
Do you realize the two of you sound like murderers right now?
Yes, rope, razor blades.
Shut up, Ben.
Yeah.
Energy bars? Acid.
No, I'm very bad. That's the one thing I can never do.
Some kind of can with water in it?
No.
No, because you don't want to keep that in the car. It's
pointless. That just goes manky. Sunscreen.
Yes, very
Always
important.
Always keep sunscreen. And I've got a small blanket in the back of my car.
That's also handy.
People in shock. I've had to wrap a dog in a small blanket to get it to the SPCA, to protect the car seats. Blankets are super handy, and they're like $19.99 if you go to like Westpac or something.
Yeah, you can get cheap-ass blankets.
Yeah.
Ben, you don't have any of this stuff with you all the time.
I don't have a car, Gareth, so it's quite difficult.
Yeah, but what do you carry with you essentially? Like all guys have to have a knife.
MacBook.
See, I don't have a knife. My golf bag I do, though. See, my golf bag actually has the biggest survival characteristics. It's got sunblock. It's got a spare towel. It's got an energy bar. It's got a knife contraption. I just need to have my golf bag with me, and I'm fine.
We do sound insane.
Yes.
And I actually do have waterproof clothing in there as well, just in case things go bad.
Really?
Yeah. I'd kill for my golf bag right now. Quick question. With golf, why would you need a spare towel?
Well, when your primary one gets wet, you need a second one to keep your like hands dry or your grips dry.
You know you can't dry a towel with another towel.
No, like because your other one's wet, so you need a second one just in case that one's gone through already.
What's the hungriest, thirstiest, or most desperate you've been in your life?
Sure. One moment that springs to mind is getting into Camp 3 on Everest. I was completely and entirely dehydrated. I took about 4 hours longer than everyone else. And because of that, that part of the mountain is like a big reflector oven.
Yeah.
So the sun comes up and temperature goes to like plus 35 degrees and you're wearing down pants from the morning.
Oh my God.
So I arrived, I was sunburnt. I was just absolutely pissed off with life. I was dehydrated. I was drinking water eventually out of a cereal bowl. On the way up, I was trying to chip off pieces of ice and suck on them just because I was that thirsty, like delirium.
Wow.
And that's the one thing that sticks in my head. But yeah, that was just because something had happened earlier in the day. One of the climbers collapsed and we stuck with him for about an hour until the Sherpas got up there with oxygen and food and water and took him down to safety. And we sat there waiting, which meant we got into camp at the wrong time when the sun was at its absolute worst. Yeah, so that's one thing that sticks out. I'm quite lucky. I've never actually been thirsty, hungry, I mean, I've read accounts where guys shared their last Snickers bar and they still had 3 days left of the trip. I've never, ever been in that situation. Yeah.
Dude, in the book, you also tell a story about your dad, which is quite hectic. You know, because a lot of people might just hear this now and go, oh, well, you know, he seems to have come right. He seems to have got out of that wheelchair. He's climbing mountains.
Yeah, it's all downhill from here. It's awesome. Plain sailing. A year almost to the day I summited Mount Everest as part of an awareness campaign to raise funding for cancer, my dad was diagnosed with colorectal cancer. And, I mean, the way they explained it to us, they said as the camera went in, they found one tumor after the next. Eventually, they gave up. He was in fourth stage cancer. And
he didn't know.
No. He'd always had issues with his stomach. He had ulcerative colitis.
Yeah.
So he thought, okay, another day of having a dodgy stomach. But, yeah, they went in with the camera, and they said the first tumor they saw was 8 centimeters long.
Good Lord.
The prognosis in the next couple of days, they would operate and remove most of his colon, and he'd have a colostomy bag for the rest of his life, which was probably about 6 months. And that was the Thursday. On the Monday, he drank potassium cyanide. And, yeah, which sort of puts a whole spin on I tried suicide. He went through with it. And at first, I mean, it was a complete...
But you found him, right?
Well, I didn't find him. I was the first to get to the scene. His wife had come back from Northgate Shopping Center, having taken the grandkids for a movie and a milkshake. And he used that time to... This was his opportunity to do it. And, yeah, I walked in. He was on the garage floor. And, it was very, very tough because... At first, she didn't show me the suicide note. So I ran up to him. I looked. I checked for a pulse. I mean, my heart was thumping so much. I couldn't actually tell if it was his pulse or mine. I smelt his breath, and I smelt apple cider.
Almonds, they say.
Yeah, it was more like apple cider, but yeah, I've heard almonds as well. And I remembered that from first aid training. It could be cyanide. And I knew he had the stuff because he was a knife maker, and they used that to antique metal. So it blackens it to give it that like look. That it's been through the wars.
Yeah, you know, you should be suspicious of anyone who keeps any kind of potassium cyanide.
And
around,
he's
right?
Austrian. How dodgy is that?
Yeah, well, yeah. You Austrian.
Can't live with them, can't bury them in the backyard.
How do you pronounce your surname?
Koyetin.
Koyetin. I was saying the J too loud.
No, it's okay. But yeah, I mean, it was really tough. And my head did loops, you know, because you go, suicide is for cowards. But then you also think, well, he was in such a scary place that death was actually the better option.
You were going to do it.
I was.
You were in no position to judge him, right?
No, absolutely. And I mean, if anything, I can defend him and say I would probably have done the same. Absolutely. And yeah, he didn't want to drag the rest of us with him. He probably couldn't have afforded the treatment. It would have been a stone around our necks, as he mentioned in the note, which I found a few hours later. And you kind of go, okay, I get it, and I completely understand it. And if anything, it was the bravest thing to be able to injure yourself so badly that you die from the injury.
Doesn't your wife want you to just chill?
No, because it's quite profitable. She owns a travel agency.
Oh, you mean it's profitable for her? She gets your money.
Yes.
For every time you... Okay.
No, she's awesome. She's my biggest supporter. You know, most guys, when they married... You know, they go, I'm going on a mountain, and the wife rolls their eyes. My wife's like, cool, when are you going? Let's start your training. Let's get
you
in shape.
She doesn't want to go with you?
She's been with me to Kilimanjaro.
Yeah, I saw the picture of you two in the book.
We still do cool stuff. This last weekend, we went hot air ballooning, which was
a really
big one. I mean, that was on my bucket list, her bucket list, and it was absolutely – I mean, she was scared out of her mind in the beginning, but we got on. It was an amazing flight. She had a great time. So, yeah, she's got the adventurous spirit, but high mountains and cold places, not really her thing.
Yeah, not really most people's thing.
There's
something wrong with you.
Yeah, I know.
It's really just you. You okay. and those dead Sherpas up on Mount Everest. Listen, dude, you are an inspiration. I love your stories. I just love your attitude to life.
Thanks, Gareth. That's really awesome.
I wish more people could think like you do. And if everybody was just chasing this kind of this bucket list idea, if everybody just wrote down, and you know what? If you haven't done it today, do it now. Just write. You don't have to do it all in 1 hour. You think about it over a few days. But put together, by the end of this week, put together a list of just 10 things you really want to do before you leave the earth. And have some of that feeling that Robbie gets out of every day.
And do them for you. And they don't have to be massive. You don't need to climb Mount Everest. By the way, it is very high and very cold. I don't recommend it. Unless you're completely in it, don't do it.
No. We had a mountain on our farm called Mount Neverest, which was about, I don't know, 3 meters above sea level. So it's not a difficult climb. And to me, that was about as much mountain climbing as I'm ever going to do.
That's brilliant. My book was actually going to be called Neverest.
Oh, okay.
From the whole unattainable to sure. Never rest, never stop going.
No, this is better. So your book is still available? People can get it?
Absolutely. I've got launch events happening at the moment. We're busy tidying up the distribution channels.
You published it yourself?
I did. I self-published.
Nice work, dude.
With That's YouTube, clever. Anything is possible.
Yeah, Left Foot, Right Foot, a story about falling down and getting up. Robbie Kiertan. Very nice, dude.
Thank you very much.
Very nice. I didn't know about the bad ankles on the back page, but everything else is beautiful.
Yeah. Can we drive people to my website? Because that's where we're having all the launch events mentioned.
What are you here for? Your health, of course. Give
absolutely.
It a mention.
Come on. My website is Robbie Speaks or Robbie's Peaks, RobbieSpeaks.com. RobbieSpeaks.com. And go there. You can see where we're launching the book. Come and get your signed copy. I'm in Durban tomorrow night at Gateway. I'm on the 17th of March. I'm in Cape Town at the Cape Union Mod Adventure Center. What's the next day? The 18th of March, I'll be at Eastgate Cape Union Mod signing books. I'm there.
You got to pay for those trips.
Yeah. Well, that's the dream. These books are going towards paying that $42,000.
Good for you.
So people can read the book and help me write the last few chapters.
There we go. There's a motivation if I've ever heard one. Thanks, man.
Thank you, guys.
Good to see you, Robbie.
Yeah, it's
all
been awesome.
There we go. CliffCentral.com.